Welcome to the Intro Biology Podcast. Today we'll be discussing metabolism and free energy. Metabolism is the totality of an organism's chemical reactions. If you were to be able to sum all of the chemical reactions occurring inside an organism, that is its metabolism. And they consist of two main classifications of pathways, catabolic and anabolic pathways. Catabolic break down material, while anabolic build up material. So a metabolic pathway specifically is a series of chemical reactions used to build anabolic or break down catabolic biological molecules. So for those catabolic pathways that are breaking down material, they're taking larger complex molecules and breaking them down into smaller, simpler molecules. And in the process, catabolic pathways release energy that can be used by the organism for other reactions and pathways. An anabolic pathway is one that takes smaller, simpler molecules and puts them together to form larger, more complex molecules. And in the process, anabolic pathways consume energy and store it in the bonds that now hold that larger, more complex molecule together. And it's important to consider these reactions as building off of one another. So the energy that's released from catabolic pathways is used by anabolic pathways to build up new material. Just a quick comment here, when we talk about pathways as being a series of chemical reactions, each of those reactions is catalyzed by an enzyme. It's those protein enzymes that are responsible for facilitating those chemical reactions that are part of these metabolic pathways. In metabolism, when we're talking about series of chemical reactions that are building up or breaking down material and consuming or producing energy, we should spend some time considering what that energy looks like. In general, energy is the capacity to cause change, or another way of saying that is that energy is the capacity to do work. Kinetic energy is energy that's associated with the relative movement of objects. Objects in motion have kinetic energy. A type of kinetic energy that's sometimes considered in biological processes is thermal energy, and this is the energy associated with the random movement of molecules. When thermal energy is transferred from one source to another, such as from the flame in a stove to a pot sitting on it, that transfer of thermal energy is called heat. Another type of energy is potential energy, and this is not energy that's associated with motion, but rather it's the energy associated with the location or the structure of something. Common example would be a ball raised into the air that's stationary in the air above the ground. It has potential energy based on its location above the ground. And when we say that potential energy can also arise from the structure of something, you can think of this a little bit more biologically and chemically, in that the configuration or the structure of a molecule, its bonds specifically, there's potential energy stored in those bonds. Chemical energy is one type of potential energy that describes the energy that's available for release in a chemical reaction. There are a few laws of energy transformation that we need to consider when we talk about chemical reactions. But before that, we should talk about thermodynamics, which is the study of energy transformations that occur in a collection of matter. And there are two things or areas that we think about when we talk about thermodynamics. The first is a system and its surroundings. Some systems are isolated or closed, and that is they do not exchange matter with their surroundings. So if it were possible to even conceive of a box that was so insulated that it didn't exchange any heat or energy or anything else with its outside environment, that would be an example of a closed system. But really those don't occur quite naturally. More commonly, we would call it an open system, and that is where the system can exchange matter between itself and its surroundings, and organisms or even smaller cells are good examples of this. Cells exchange matter and energy with their surroundings. So now for the laws of energy transformation, or the laws of thermodynamics. The first law of thermodynamics says that energy can be transferred or transformed, but it cannot be created or destroyed. Because of that, this first law of thermodynamics is sometimes called the principle of conservation of energy. For example, the energy that's absorbed by plants in the form of sunlight is converted to the chemical energy stored in the bonds of the matter that those plants synthesize, but that energy has to be accounted for. The plants aren't just creating this energy, they're getting it from another place. So energy can only be transferred or transformed. It cannot be created or destroyed. The second law of thermodynamics says that every energy transfer or transformation increases the entropy of the universe. Entropy is a measure of molecular disorder. So what this law says is that in every transfer or transformation of energy, there's an increase in the randomness or the disorder of the universe. One other thing to consider here is the idea of a spontaneous process. A spontaneous process is one that occurs without an overall input of energy. That is, you might have to put in a little bit of energy, but the output of energy that you get is greater. And so the net gain of energy is what would make that a spontaneous process. All spontaneous processes increase entropy. They increase randomness or disorder. And importantly, spontaneity does not imply speed. Just because a reaction is said to be spontaneous does not mean that it happens quickly. Next, we'll spend a little bit more time talking about this energy that's being transferred or transformed in chemical reactions. So a term, free energy, or sometimes called Gibbs free energy, is the portion of a biological system's energy that can perform work when temperature and pressure are uniform through the system. This equation for Gibbs free energy is sometimes written as delta G, delta meaning change, so change in free energy, is equal to delta enthalpy, or change in enthalpy, minus the temperature times the change in entropy. So one more time, change in energy is equal to change in enthalpy minus temperature times change in entropy. And we'll discuss a little bit more about what these mean. In this equation, it's important to note that temperature here is measured in the units Kelvin. And to convert between Celsius and Kelvin, you add 273.15. You can think of enthalpy as the total energy of the system. One way to consider the spontaneity of a reaction is to consider the change in free energy that occurs during that reaction. Spontaneous reactions are those in which the change in free energy, or the delta G, is less than zero, or negative. Non-spontaneous reactions are those in which the free energy change is greater than zero. And this can be thought of both from the equation we already talked about, where delta G equals delta H, or delta enthalpy minus temperature times change in entropy. If the solution to that equation is a negative number, the reaction is said to be spontaneous. Another way to look at it, though, is to consider the final and the initial energy of the system, the free energy at the end and the free energy at the beginning. If you subtract final free energy minus initial free energy, you also get delta G, or change in free energy. So a spontaneous reaction in that context means that there's less energy in the system at the end of the reaction than there was in the beginning. And this means that when that decrease in energy occurs, it's released or it goes somewhere else. And that's part of what causes this to be a spontaneous reaction. You can also think of this as that a high free energy, a high G, means that you're less stable. There's more energy required to hold that condition or that structure together. When you transition from a high free energy to a low free energy, you're shifting to a more stable condition where less energy is required to hold the system together. So in that context, you can also consider spontaneity as moving from a less stable to a more stable state. At equilibrium, something we've talked about in the chemical reaction sense, in this context, equilibrium is when the free energy is at its lowest. You can think of it as a valley if you were looking at peaks and valleys. The valley where free energy is the lowest is the point at equilibrium. Any change from equilibrium, any change from that valley is non-spontaneous because you would have to add free energy in order to get out of that valley and push it upwards. To add just one more way to think about spontaneity is the direction that things are likely to occur over time. So, for example, a ball held in the air is likely to fall to the ground. So the spontaneous reaction of a ball suspended in the air would be for it to fall. Similarly, if you had lots of molecules in the same space, eventually they would diffuse out and it's more likely to occur. And so that would be the more spontaneous thing to happen. Two more terms to introduce here are the terms exergonic and endergonic. These terms exclusively describe energy changes. If a reaction is exergonic, energy is released. So the products of the reaction have less energy than the reactions, and that's usually a spontaneous reaction. An endergonic reaction is one that absorbs energy, and this is said to be non-spontaneous when the products have more energy than the reactants. And again, just because a reaction gains or releases energy does not indicate its speed. You could have a spontaneous reaction that releases energy that occurs very, very slowly. The final thing we'll discuss here is the relationship between equilibrium and metabolism. We said earlier that equilibrium is when you're at a minimum G, when G is at its lowest. And at this point, no work can be done. If you're at the lowest G of the reaction, no work can be done. This would be untenable in a biological system because cells and organisms constantly need to be doing work. So what these cells and organisms do is they maintain a constant state of disequilibrium so that they're never at this minimum G value so that they can continue to do work. So you can think of an analogy where you have water flowing down a hill, and as it flows, it triggers turbines that then produce energy, such as turning on a light bulb. If the hill is at an incline, the water will continually flow downwards, driving those turbines and illuminating the lights. If the hill were ever to become flat, the water would cease to flow, the turbines would not spin, and the lights would not be illuminated. So you can think of the cell as ensuring that the hill is always on an incline, chemically, biologically ensuring that equilibrium does not exist, that there is a constant flow downwards where energy can be released to drive other biological processes. So the cell works to ensure that it does not reach equilibrium to continue driving biological processes. To summarize what we talked about today, metabolism involves all processes that build up, called anabolic, or break down, called catabolic, biological molecules. In biological systems, most potential energy is stored in chemical bonds, which is sometimes called chemical energy, and that energy can be released during catabolic processes that break things down. The first law of thermodynamics says that energy cannot be created or destroyed, only transformed. And the second law of thermodynamics says that entropy or disorder always increases. The free energy of a chemical reaction is a combination of the enthalpy and the entropy, and the equation for that is delta G, or change in free energy, equals delta H, or change in enthalpy, minus T delta S, or temperature times change in entropy. Spontaneous reactions are exergonic. They release energy and they have a negative delta G. Non-spontaneous reactions are endergonic. They absorb energy and they have a positive delta G. Equilibrium represents the lowest energy, or G, in a chemical reaction.